Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with our discussion of fascism around the world and through the ages. In the previous half-hour segment, we were examining information from the Searchlight magazine about the Congress, the official Congress of the Italian Fascist Party, the Alleanza Nazionale, the direct successor to Mussolini's Fascisti, that Congress having taken place in Verona, Italy, in February. I noted the similarity between the rhetoric that is being bandied about now by the Alleanza Nazionale and other overtly fascist European parties. Although they're trying to distance themselves from fascism, these are fascist parties with a capital F. And I want people to note the rhetorical and ideological similarity between these fascist parties and the Republican Party in the United States and other reactionary elements here in the United States, because the continuity of fascism through the ages and around the world is something which continues to bedevil the human race. Now, in addition to U.S. Republican Representative Bob Young, another person who was present at the Congress of the Italian Fascist Party in Verona was Israeli politician Udi Cohen, last name C-O-H-E-N, who brought his greetings from the right-wing Likud party in Israel. A couple of months ago, I was asked during the phone-in session in my home base station or on my home base station of KFJC-FM in the South San Francisco Bay Area whether there were any direct connections between the current government of Israel and the fascist element within the Zionist movement, that fascist element being represented both by the Beitar and the more extremist Stern Gang. I do not want to be misunderstood in any way as saying that Zionism is fascist. Zionism is a pluralistic political movement, much more so than it has usually been represented, and it embraced elements running all the way from doctrinaire left socialists or to doctrinaire fascists on the right wing. In fact, there were actually pitched battles in the city of Tel Aviv in the 30s and 40s between socialist and fascist Zionists. But at the same time, it's important to understand that one very important element of the Zionist movement was fascist, and that movement was represented by the Beitar, that's spelled B-E-T-A-R, headed up by Vladimir Jabotinsky, that man's last name, J-A-B-O-T-I-N-S-K-Y. I've talked about the fascist Beitar in two miscellaneous archive shows available from Spitfire. One is entitled Fascist Zionist Connections, and the other is entitled Strange Bedfellows. The Beitar, although much less politically extreme than the Nazis, were very sympathetic to fascism around the world. And in fact, in Italy, the Beitar took military training at Mussolini's Naval Cadet School. Mussolini himself reviewed the Beitar cadre at one point. And the leader of the Beitar, Vladimir Jabotinsky, writing in L'Idea Zionistica, the Italian Zionist publication, made it clear that the affinity between Mussolini and Jabotinsky and the Beitar was not merely one of political convenience, but one of ideological solidarity. The two most famous graduates of the Beitar were Menachem Begin, a former Israeli prime minister, and also the extreme right-wing rabbi Meir Kahane, assassinated in 1991. As a young man, Kahane was a member of the Beitar. I was not able to respond directly to this particular listener in citing any hard connections between the current Israeli government and the Beitar. I did express the opinion when asked, though, that in my opinion, the right wing of the Israeli government, exemplified by Netanyahu and the Likud party, were the ideological heirs to the Beitar. What I did not know at that time, that there is a direct connection between Benjamin Netanyahu as a political animal and the Beitar, again, one of the fascist elements within the Zionist movement. Research credit on the following goes to a listener. This comes from Salon Magazine. That's a magazine that's published on the World Wide Web. Their website is www.salonmagazine.com/col/HITC. Once again, www.salonmagazine, S-A-L-O-N-M-A-G-A-Z-I-N-E, .com/col/HITC. This particular article by nationally syndicated columnist Christopher Hitchens is entitled The Iron Wall, and it talks about Benjamin Netanyahu's father, Benzion Netanyahu, and his work as Vladimir Jabotinsky's secretary. The article reads in part, by the way, this is Dateline Jerusalem, and this is from Salon Magazine's issue of, this is from April 4th of 1998. And my guess is this particular article is posted on the Salon Magazine Worldwide. Well, actually, this is from Salon Magazine, April 13th, 1998. That's the exact reference. April 13th, 1998. State Line Jerusalem, it's headlined, The Iron Wall. Subtitled, Benjamin Netanyahu talks a lot about, quote, security, unquote, but his actions show he's interested in no such thing. The article reads in part as follows. Just as Kofi Annan was leaving town and U.S. negotiator Dennis Ross was arriving to try to keep the peace process going, and just as Benjamin Netanyahu was once again donning the skullcap and visiting fortified Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank, I managed to ask him in public whether he still believed in the relevance of early Zionist theorist Vladimir Jabotinsky. Skipping down, a few weeks ago in this holy city, a public lecture was offered by Ben Zion Netanyahu, that first name Benzion. It was in honor of a man named Abba Ahimeir, Ahimeir. Neither of these two men is perhaps as well known as he ought to be. Benzion Netanyahu, the 87-year-old father of the Israeli prime minister, is a scholar at Princeton University and the author of The Origins of the Inquisition, a brilliant and exhaustive account of the anti-Judaism of the Spanish Inquisition, which also explains the persistence of anti-Semitism in modern times. Abba Ahimeir was a writer and activist in British Mandate Palestine and a zealous lieutenant of Jabotinsky. In the pages of the magazine Dor Hayom, that's capital D-O-A-R, capital H-A-Y-O-M, during the late 1920s and 1930s, he wrote a celebrated column titled, From the Notebook of a Fascist, unquote. He hymned Mussolini, referred to Jabotinsky as our Duce, and even went so far as to say that Hitler was on the right track, except for his excessive anti-Semitism. Jabotinsky, it must be said, demurred a little on that last point, but still, the revisionist Beitar movement did parade with torches and colored shirts and had a generally friendly attitude to the emerging new order in Europe until it was almost too late. Ahimeir, said the elder Netanyahu, had been his mentor, and it is very well attested that Netanyahu the younger makes few moves without consulting his revered papa, who also rose to be Jabotinsky's secretary and pallbearer. So please note that Benjamin Netanyahu, the current prime minister of Israel, is the son of Benzion Netanyahu, who was Jabotinsky's secretary and pallbearer, and the elder Netanyahu, with whom Benjamin Netanyahu regularly confers for political advice, basically stated that Abba Ahimeir was his mentor. And the aforementioned Ahimeir wrote a column for the magazine Dor Hayom entitled From the Notebook of a Fascist. So again, please note that there is, in fact, a line of direct historical and political continuity from the Beitar to the current leadership of Israel, the current political leadership of Israel. As I mentioned, there was an even more extreme element of the Zionist movement, of the fascist element within the Zionist movement called the Stern Gang. And again, please do not misunderstand me as implying that the Zionist movement is fascist, but yet there are some important elements within it that were and are. Research credit on the following goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator, who got the following from the Daily Telegraph. This is an article by Anton LaGuardia entitled, The Violent Birth of a Jewish State, subtitled, As Israel Prepares to Celebrate its 50th Anniversary, Anton LaGuardia Recalls the Bloodshed. And skipping down about the aforementioned Stern Gang, at the Arab-Israeli Peace Conference held in Madrid in 1991, the Syrian delegation famously held up an old British wanted poster of Mr. Shamir to prove that he was a terrorist. That, by the way, refers to Yitzhak Shamir, the best-known graduate of the Stern Gang, himself later a prime minister of Israel. Continuing, it was Mr. Shamir who ordered the murder of Lord Moyne, the British minister resident in Cairo in 1944. Today, Mr. Shamir says he has no regrets. He told the Daily Telegraph this month that he would have been happy to kill Lord Moyne himself. Quote, Lehi, L-A-H-I, was the first movement to declare that the main goal of the Jewish national effort had to be to expel the British rulers as foreign rulers by all means, unquote, he explained. Again, quoting, the idea was to inflict losses to compel the British to leave. And skipping down, in its simple-minded campaign against the British, the Stern Gang even flirted with the Nazis, although Mr. Shamir said that he had opposed such overtures. Again, for a period of time, the Stern Gang was actually considering a military alliance with Nazi Germany to drive the British out of Palestine. And again, I don't want to be misunderstood as implying that the Zionist movement is fascist, but yet it's important to understand that there are some very important fascist elements within that pluralistic movement, and they should be taken account of. I also want to note that there are very profound connections between international fascism and various Middle Eastern nationalist movements, including the Palestinian National Movement. In RFA number 22, among other programs, I discussed the fact that the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement, Haj Amin al-Husseini, was himself a major in the SS and a key Nazi spy in the Middle East. And again, RFA 22 is available from Spitfire. And just as Benjamin Netanyahu is directly evolved from the Beitar, one of the key fascist elements within the Zionist movement, so too Yasser Arafat was a protege of Otto Skorzeny, the SS commando extraordinaire, one of the leaders of the post-World War II Odessa, and one of the many SS men and diehard Nazis who went to work for the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit and through that, at least for a time, for the CIA. About Yasser Arafat's political lineage with Otto Skorzeny, we are once again going to turn to the book The Beast Reawakens by Martin A. Lee, published in hardcover by Little Brown and Company in copyright 1997. The mission referred to here is a group of Nazis, many of them SS, many of them Wehrmacht, some of them graduates of Goebbels' propaganda ministry, who were helping to train not only the Egyptian general staff, but to put together the Egyptian intelligence service. This mission was undertaken on behalf of the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit, in turn working as a proxy for the Central Intelligence Agency. And it was in Egypt as a member of this Nazi Gehlen CIA contingent that Otto Skorzeny first hooked up with Yasser Arafat. Martin Lee writes about this, saying, "The Nazis on the Egyptian payroll were engaged in more than just a war of words. According to the Times of London, in addition to serving as advisors to the Egyptian army, German war veterans were also instructing Arab volunteers in guerrilla tactics for possible action against British troops in the Suez Canal zone. The Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung subsequently reported that Otto Skorzeny had met with Colonel Nasser to discuss the training of commando troops. Several young Palestinian refugees, including Yasser Arafat, joined the Egyptian soldiers who were learning the ways and means of unconventional warfare. Although initially the intended target was the British, the future PLO chief realized that rigorous commando exercises would help prepare the Palestinian militants who were eager to renew the battle for their lost homeland. A grateful Arafat recognized Skorzeny's abundant skills in this area, and the two men struck up a relationship that lasted for many years. Apparently, the Palestinian leader was quite fond of the scar-faced paladin. Arafat would have done anything for Otto," remarked Ilse Skorzeny. Ilse Skorzeny was Otto Skorzeny's widow. So again, note that on the other side of the coin, Yasser Arafat, the current leader of the Palestinian National Movement, is himself a protege of Otto Skorzeny. And by that, I don't want to be misunderstood as implying that the Palestinian National Movement is fascist either. Once again, it is much more pluralistic than has been represented, but it's important to note that there are many critical elements in it which are fascist. I've always thought that the dalliance of elements of the Zionist movement with fascism was brutally ironic in light of the murderous attitude that the Nazis had toward the Jews, and I would note that Mussolini collaborated with the doctrinaire anti-Semitism of the Nazis. The continued fraternization between reactionary elements in Israel and international fascism, as exemplified by Udi Cohen's presence at the Congress of the Italian Fascist Party in Verona, that's more than a little ironic because around the world, not only is fascism on the march, but in the former Soviet Union, fascism is rearing its ugly head in a big way, and one of the characteristic elements of Russian fascism is a virulent, almost medieval anti-Semitism. About the rise of fascism in Russia, there are many articles that have made the news recently. Today, which for the benefit of people hearing this on tape, today is Sunday, May 17th, and in both the San Francisco Chronicle and San Francisco Examiner today, there are articles about the rise of skinhead violence in Moscow. There was another article in the New York Times of Tuesday, May 5th of 1998. This article is by Michael R. Gordon. It's Dateline Moscow, May 4th, and it reads, "Black U.S. Marine assaulted in wave of racism in Moscow. A black American Marine has been severely beaten by a band of Russian skinheads in a new wave of assaults against foreigners of African and Asian descent. The attack occurred in daylight on Saturday at Feeley Park, a busy area where Russians often buy compact discs, according to Western officials. The pattern of assaults has become so worrisome that the American embassy has 2 times alerted United States citizens, particularly those of African or Asian origin, that they may be the subjects of unprovoked attacks. Other embassies have issued similar warnings. And I would note that the recent expansion of NATO is very likely to increase Russian xenophobia and their general feeling of resentment towards the outside world. My guess is that in terms of internal Russian politics, the expansion of NATO is likely to hasten the rise of fascism in Russia with a virulently anti-American strain. As I mentioned, fascism is on the march in Russia, and when it is characterized by an almost medieval anti-Semitism, making the recent presence of Udi Cohen of the Likud Party at the Congress of the Italian Fascist Party in Verona all the more ironic. The very same issue of the Searchlight magazine, which reported on that Congress, the April 1998 issue of the Searchlight, has a very good article about the rise of the RNE, the Russian National Unity Organization of Alexander Barkashov. By the way, there's a good and more lengthy discussion of Barkashov in the aforementioned The Beast Reawakens by Martin Lee. This article is entitled, By the Searchlight, Trial Exposes Russian Nazis' Official Links. Subtitled an exclusive on-the-spot report by a special correspondent in Oryol. That's capital O-R-Y-O-L. A group of Russian Nazis from Alexander Barkashov's violent Russian National Unity Organization are on trial in the city of Oryol for carrying out the contract killing of a woman and her child. The case is significant in that it highlights the measure of support for this criminal fascist organization within the region. The fascists' very real and cordial links with the authorities, and the sinister activities of the RNE underworld. Well, that last sentence again. The case is significant in that it highlights the measure of support for the criminal fascist organization within the region, the fascists' very real and cordial links with the authorities, and the sinister activities of the RNE underworld. And after describing the Battle of Kursk, viewed by many as one of the key turning points on the Eastern Front in World War II, the article skips down and continues as follows. Now, a latter-day fifth column of homebred Russian Nazis is getting ready to repeat the gruesome deeds of their German predecessors and appears to enjoy the complicity of some of those who organize the ceremonies and make the official commemorative speeches. The trial began last September after a group of RNE activists were arrested on various charges. The RNE is a paramilitary nationalist organization with a network across Russia. Its members, who wear black uniforms and red armbands with a stylized three-fingered swastika, are known as Barkashovtsy after their criminally convicted leader. Igor Semyonov, head of the local RNE branch, is accused of distributing a leaflet in December of 1993 that threatened the city's Jewish population with, quote, bloodshed, unquote, unless they stopped celebrating the festival of Hanukkah. The same leaflet labeled Judaism, quote, a man-hating religion, unquote. Semyonov is also charged with making a call to, quote, organize real terror against the Jews, unquote, at an RNE rally in August of 1994. Finally, the indictment cites numerous statements from Semyonov's speeches and publications in which he expounds Russian national superiority and urges terror against minorities. At the 1994 rally, Semyonov blamed the Jews and national minorities from the Caucasus for causing AIDS and dealing drugs among the citizens of Russia, and branded them, quote, enemies of the human race, unquote. Following complaints about the speech, police raided Semyonov's home and found lists of local Jewish residents with addresses and telephone numbers. According to the police deposition, Semyonov was sending this information to Moscow, where it was being stored in a computer database to await Barkashov's rise to power. The police also uncovered detailed evidence of the RNE's paramilitary activities, including the formation of so-called assault detachments, unquote, and plans to set up arms dumps in the forests around Oryol. 3 other RNE officers are also charged with distributing hate leaflets, while a fifth man, Dumnov, is accused of enlisting Semyonov's help to kill a female relative in order to get her apartment. The killers recommended by Semyonov were members of one of his assault detachments. The brutal murder of the woman and her small son, which took place in October of 1994, sent a shockwave through the city and prompted the police to take a closer look at the RNE. The trail led first to Dumnov and then to Semyonov, who was finally arrested in a police swoop in January of 1996. Despite the public outrage at the killing, Semyonov's arrest sparked off a wave of sympathy for him in high places. First to leap to his defense was the local daily paper Ordovskaya Pravda, which is closely aligned to the authorities and rarely says anything contentious. In an article on the case, the paper said Semyonov was, quote, very honest and a man of principle, unquote. It went on to pose the rhetorical question, in today's Russia, can a Russian accused of insulting Jews prove his innocence, unquote? Support for the paper's pro-Nazi, anti-Semitic stance also came from members of Nina Andreeva's All-Russian Communist Party, or VCPB, in a letter published on May 30, 1997. These hardcore Stalinist nationalists confirmed that they knew Semyonov from, quote, many years of joint practical activity, unquote. One can assume that they were referring to his former job with the local television station Nakanune, where he was officially employed as a cameraman, but seemed to appear in far more programs than he ever filmed. When Nakanune, N-A-K-A-N-U-N-E, fired Semyonov, the local VCPB branch protested. The fact that these, quote, communists, unquote, perceived Semyonov as an ally illustrates the bizarre and perverse ideological and political links between the extreme right and extreme left in Russian politics. Andreeva's VCPB is usually described as less nationalistic and more radical than Gennady Zhuganov's mainstream Communist Party of the Russian Federation, or CPRF, which is the strongest single faction in the Duma, the lower house in the Russian parliament. However, the situation in Oryol proves that extreme nationalism is being taken on board by all the anti-democratic movements, including those that paint themselves in the colors of Leninism. The VCPB and CPRF are bitter rivals. Because the VCPB has already climbed onto the RNE bandwagon, the CPRF was not going to be outdone and rushed to provide defense lawyers for the Nazis, the Red-Brown Alliance in action. Incredibly, one of these lawyers, Nikolai Alexeyev, a member of the regional parliament, echoed the RNE's anti-Semitism but saying that, quote, to celebrate Hanukkah is like celebrating the anniversary of Babi Yar, a reference to the mass murder of Jews by the Nazis at Babi Yar near Kiev in September of 1941. But the biggest shocks were reserved for when the case went to court. Soon after the trial began, it became clear that the court's sympathy lay with the defendant. Semyonov was afforded every opportunity to expand his racist theories, whereas witnesses who tried to demonstrate the criminal nature of the RNE were rudely interrupted by the judge, Alexander Kunetsov. In his testimony, Semyonov strove to prove two mutually exclusive arguments, that he had never spoken ill of the Jews or people from the Caucasus, and that all his vile allegations against them were true. During the trial's very first session, Semyonov was sounding off about how all citizens of, quote, alien, unquote, religion would have to be interned and making slanderous and disdainful comments, remarks comparing Jews to vagrants and tramps, as well as commenting, quote, one may doubt the mental ability of the Jews, unquote. Professor Sergei Shavko, S-H-A-V-K-O, a prosecution witness, quoted Semyonov's statement, quote, I recognize Jews with flair, unquote, as evidence of his attempts to stir national and anti-Semitic hatred. He was stopped by the judge with the remark, you were used to lecturing at the university, but there's no need to teach us, unquote. When Maya Hallman, a Jewish woman, recounted her experiences as a victim of anti-Semitism and described the pain caused by the RNE's propaganda, the court was treated to another dose of Kuznetsov's prejudices. Quote, why are you so sensitive to the Jewish religion? Is it bad for you here? You have secretly assimilated Judaism, he taunted her. It seems that in Kuznetsov's view, to live in Russia means to profess Russian Orthodox Christianity, while all the other religions are by definition subversive and anti-Russian. The Russian Orthodox Church has always been strongly infected with nationalist ideas, and it was predictable that the local clergy would be wheeled in to defend Semyonov. On the 3rd of November, the court heard testimony from Vladimir Gusev, an Orthodox priest. In his lengthy statement, Gusev asserted, quote, Judaism is not just an aggressive, but a destructive religion, unquote, and, quote, Hasids kill children, collect their blood, dry it and sprinkle matzah with it, unquote. His fulsome approval of the RNE was evident from his statement that, quote, what Semyonov says conforms to what really exists, unquote. To support his statement, he quoted the words of the late Orthodox Metropolitan of St. Petersburg, a noted xenophobe. "Judaism, in the Christian sense, does not have any positive significance," unquote. The Orthodox Bishop of Oryol has laid the ground for the twisted, hate-filled sentiments of Gusev last June by giving his religious blessing to the establishment of the so-called Orthodox Youth Union, chaired by the notorious RNE activist Dmitry Lakut, with Eugenie Shilin, a close associate of the bishop, as his deputy. The initiative to create this ultra-right obscurantist outfit, however, came from deep within the Oryol regional government, whose head, Yegor Stroyev, connives with the RNE. Stroyev is more than just a regional leader. He chairs the Federation Council, the upper boss of the Russian parliament, and is a key figure in Russia's power, structure. A former Communist Party member and bureaucrat, he now portrays himself as, quote, an independent administrator whose main business is the economy, not politics. Stroyev's triumph, with 95% of the vote in the 1997 elections for the regional governorship, was described by the Western media as a victory for common sense over party cleavages. But for those who have ever scrutinized his, quote, neutral, unquote, stance, his backing for the RNE comes as no surprise. In autumn of 1993, Emmanuel Mendelevich, a correspondent for the Moscow-based human rights paper Express Kronika, asked Stroyev what he thought about the fascist revival in Oryol. Stroyev replied, "I believe the Russian people have the same right for a national culture as all other peoples," unquote. In effect, Stroyev was endorsing the RNE's policy of violently imposing Russian culture on others. This conversation was reproduced in a book by the journalist Vladimir Charlotte, The Red Belt, The Jewish Question in Oryol. The first edition appeared in 1995, but in the second edition a year later, Stroyev's reply is omitted. The reason is obvious. By then, Stroyev had been elected chairman of the Federation Council. The mutual admiration and sympathy in which the Nazi Semyonov and the, quote, neutral, unquote, Stroyev hold one another is well-founded. In a report in 1993, Semyonov wrote, quote, "We have succeeded in getting acknowledgement in the regional administrative structures which firmly protect our back and allow us to conduct our work without fear of being arrested," unquote. During that year, the RNE assisted Stroyev's election campaign, and later Semyonov worked for the regional committee of the CPRF's Russian Union of Youth, which is firmly integrated in the regional administration in Oryol. Semyonov was even awarded an honorary badge for his work among young residents of the city. Even though Stroyev knew the exact nature of his politics, he could hardly fail to notice that Semyonov added a swastika to his signature on all his letters, including those to Stroyev. With this background, it was hardly surprising that Semyonov refused to say anything about Stroyev when asked by the court. All he did was to proclaim proudly, quote, "I have taken our visual propaganda material for examination by the FSB, and there was no criticism," unquote. The FSB, or Federal Security Service, the successor to the KGB secret police, had every opportunity to evaluate the barefaced, violent anti-Semitism and racism of the RNE's posters and leaflets, and gave the fascists the green light for distribution. And that's all we have time for this evening. I want to stress that fascism once again is on the march around the world. And I predicted in 1992, shortly after the collapse of the Soviet Union, that eventually Russia would go fascist as well. I hope I proved to be wrong, but it's looking as though I may turn out to be right. That concludes this segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.